What is Christianity? Christianity is an explanation of all of reality. There's not one square inch of human existence as to which Christ, who is sovereign over all, does not cry out, "My!"
This is Breakpoint This Week, a weekly briefing on faith, culture, worldview, and mission with Ed Stetzer of Wheaton College and John Stone Street of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview.
Well, Ed, another big week and lots to talk about. I want to get into a topic that obviously is incredibly important and has been highlighted, something we've talked about in the past, and it's been highlighted by some celebrities this week, not in a certainly a good way. I'm talking about the epidemic of suicide. But I think we probably should start by talking about the historic meeting between President Trump and Leader Kim from North Korea. I mean, the first time a sitting president and a leader of North Korea have had that sort of a meeting. We've heard everything from it was nothing to it was something. And you can guess who's saying which side of that. But at the very least, in fact, I think I heard NPR on the day after the historic meeting saying it was nothing, and then because it didn't accomplish anything, and then the next day when Leader Kim sat down with the president of Singapore saying how big that was, whether or not anything was accomplished just because they sat down. So I don't know what the difference is between one or the other.
It is hard to keep up with the narratives. And I would say it's not nothing, and it could be a very, very big deal. And I think the statement was a bit unclear and certainly working. But again, this is diplomacy is a work in progress and a work in process. Now, again, what everyone knows is that Kim is and the whole his family have lied, have cheated on agreement after agreement. I mean, right. We literally have past presidents of the United States saying that we've solved this issue. Now, again, but it is interesting. It is one of those, to me, one of those situations where for many people, President Trump can do nothing right. Now, there are a whole lot of people where President Trump can do nothing wrong. But here, I think that the potential here is good, is significant. We want a denuclearized peninsula, but also we want a North Korea where people aren't kept in gulags. We want a North Korea where Christians are not generationally imprisoned, for their parents and then them as children, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a bad guy, but it's the bad guys that sometimes we have to negotiate with, and so again, I'm at this point. I'm hopeful. I think it's a good thing that we've now, I don't know if it'll be a good thing, but it's a good thing at this moment that we're talking rather than at war. And actually, literally, the Koreas, there have been no technical end to the war, but now we're at these places. So I think ultimately what I'm doing is I'm praying. It is funny though. It is funny. So if President Obama had met with the dictator, I think what you'd find is that there'd be breathless coverage of his courage. And when President Trump does, it's, well, maybe he's been tricked or taken. Here's the reality. We don't know. We're not in the negotiation, but there are really smart people in this conversation. And if we don't come to an agreement with North Korea, I do think that, I mean, almost all observers say that we're on a path to war and conflict. And I think it's worth the risk of President Trump looking bad. It's worth the risk of the United States looking bad to meet with this person to try to present what would be, I mean, a stunning number of casualties in the first moments of a war between North Korea and South Korea and the United States.
Yeah, no, that's right. And this is another one of many examples where, as we've said in the past, we've got to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. In recent weeks, we have criticized the administration's policy on the border of separating children from their families. And this week, there was a lot more noise about that. There were plenty of people saying, I think we can say we want a well-guarded border. We might even want a wall on the southern border and still say that parents shouldn't be separated from their children. And there were some crazy stories this week about a breastfeeding mom. And of course, we don't know that being separated from her baby, these things haven't been, fully verified. But we do know that children are being separated as a matter of policy. And we've actually heard Sessions say it. And so we can say both, and we've got to say both. And I found the same thing to be true this week, talking about President Trump and this historic meeting with the dictator from North Korea is I'm hopeful and I'm happy that the meeting took place. I think this could actually move forward. And then President Trump made a very unfortunate statement in which he said that this leader of North Korea loves his people and he did what he had to do. And it was classic President Trump speaking off script, you know, and basically then minimizing in his words the sort of human rights abuses which have been widely recognized globally to be the worst.
Yeah, and when we talk about human rights abuses, we're talking about the kinds of things. I mean, this is one of the most evil dictatorships we have known historically.
And, that's right.
And again, this is why, if you remember when his sister, when Kim Jong-un's sister went to the Olympics and it was all this, oh, look, you know, she's like this diplomacy. And like, this is a regime that kills people. I mean, literally sends people to kill them in airports, family members in airports, using nerve agents and more. I mean, this is a whole level of crazy evil. And again, you remember back in the day when everyone mocked the phrase, the axis of evil. Again, I think it's kind of quaint and sweet that there are people who actually think there's not evil in the world. There is. North Korea is part of the axis of that evil and really has led to some tremendous internal persecution and more. And here's the deal, without naming names, because I don't think neither you or I would want to, but I know people who have been impacted by this persecution. I know people who have tried to rescue people from this persecution, but I know people who've actually been in those detention camps and gotten out. Japan's upset about some of these things because what North Korea has done is come up to the coast of Japan and send people out in a submarine and then go grab people on the coast of Japan, take them back to North Korea so that they could teach people Japanese or whatever else it may be. So this is, I mean, the level of evil, crazy evil here is hard. But again, here's the reality, and here's the tough thing, and this is the part that nobody likes. When we're talking about negotiating for peace, there's sometimes you're negotiating with the bad guy, and ultimately that's where we are right now. So again, I do think, you know, back to our reference to the coverage, I think the coverage has been unfair, and I think it is true that for many people they just cannot say that this may have been a good thing. And what I would say is President Trump's actions up till now, that many people said and did. I mean, again, I'm not so sure the arguing about the size of the nuclear button is a helpful approach to diplomacy. But again, it's brought us to a negotiating table. I'm hoping it actually brings us to a real, lasting, and verifiable denuclearization of the peninsula and a step back away from war.
Yeah, no, that's right. And we've got to be able to say both. We've got to be able to say, look, a denuclearized peninsula is better than a nuclearized peninsula. But what we really want, too, is reprieve from this regime and the evils that they have perpetrated. I mean, it's just a crazy world. I mean, it's a crazy world when Dennis Rodman is being, people are calling for Dennis Rodman to get a Medal of Freedom. You're listening to Breakpoint This Week with Ed Stetzer and John Stone Street. We'll be right back.
We invite you to visit Breakpoint.org. While you're at our website, be sure to browse our online Colson Center store of great books and other resources. And you can link up to our social media sites like Facebook and Twitter.
This is Ed Stetzer here with John Stone Street, Breakpoint This Week. John, you mentioned Dennis Rodman is now our functioning Secretary of State. But you know, Kim Kardashian is actually also advising on issues of prison reform, actually in some ways that have led to some good things. But I want to sort of remind people who watch Star Trek, listening to the Kardashians never goes well. Just remember that. They were the bad guy. You didn't watch Star Trek, do you?
I don't watch Star Trek. I thought it was the Klingons. Is it the Kardashians that I miss watching?
You've
got
to keep up. The Klingons are our allies now, and occasionally they break from the pack. But the Kardashians, you know, those are the ones who are actually they're kind of the bad guys, and they align with the Dominion, and it leads to a war. Anyway, a whole lot of people are saying, I love that Ed Stetzer's talking about this, and a whole lot of other people are saying, I don't get the joke, Kardashians, but anyway.
So for those keeping score at home, what we've learned is that Ed Stetzer watches Star Trek, and John Stone Street watches the NBA Finals. Let's turn the table here.
There's truth to that. There's truth to that. But let's talk about more important things. You go ahead.
Well, listen, after that light intro, there was a report this week from the CDC, and we've talked about this in the past, and there's been a couple things that have brought this issue kind of back to my intention. I want to talk about it this week because I think it's a it's not only an opportunity for the church, it's a call for the church. When the church sees brokenness, the church should run into it. That's what has happened throughout history. That's what our Lord did. But the attention on suicide has been highlighted this week, mainly because of back-to-back suicides by New York handbag designer Kate Spade and, of course, CNN celebrity chef, travel guy Anthony Bourdain. CNN devoted an awful lot of coverage this past week to talking about Anthony Bourdain, and a lot of people reacted as well. But in the midst of that, I think the thing, and those are stories that should break our hearts and they should get our attention, but what got my attention this week was the CDC report that came out recently, that between 1999 and 2016, so the last 7 years or so, suicide rates in all but one state in the U.S., across age, across gender, across ethnic lines, increased. And the only state it didn't increase in already had above average suicide rates. So this is no small issue in the United States. In fact, these sorts of deaths are now being called deaths from despair. And suicide's only one kind of them. I mean, if you throw in alcohol abuse, you throw in the opioid epidemic across the country, something we've talked about before as well, Ed. I mean, we have a despairing society. And it's not reaching just the poor communities, as Anthony Bourdain's story and Kate Spade's story and so many other stories. And, you know, we mentioned a few months ago, our friend from Wisconsin, the pastor Bill Lentz, just a shocking suicide in the middle of 20, 30 years of ministry. I mean, we talk about these sorts of things because it's reaching every area of society. And it's pointing to something that in American society, we have wealth, we have opportunity, we have freedom, we have tons of stuff. But for many people, there's not a reason to live. And that's something that the church needs to face head on.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. And I think the church has not excelled in some of the space here as well. We did some research at Lifeway Research. It's actually in partnership with the American Association of Christian Counselors and some others. And I'll actually talk about it at the American Association of Christian Counselors national meeting in Dallas in September. And in there, what we found was that for many places, I mean, suicide is just a kind of still a taboo topic. It's interesting to kind of see the survey results, right? So we found that 3/4 of churchgoers say suicide is a problem that needs to be addressed in their community. And actually about 1/3 say a close acquaintance or a family member has died by suicide. And I know somebody who has, and my guess is that many of our listeners do as well. But the reality is in a lot of times churches aren't sure how best to respond. And a lot of times people withdraw. And again, I've been really passionate about this. I've written some about this. And literally this morning, I got a direct message from somebody on Twitter that happened to know. And she wrote me, she said, 3 weeks ago, I asked for prayer. She sent me a picture for this 13-year-old boy who attempted suicide. Yesterday, after another attempt, he died. And she asked me, you know, to try to get the, and so the fact we're talking about this today, you know, she said, I'm a Christian, but this temptation has not eluded me. We got to check on people that are struggling. God can work, and talks about how with their living, the enemy comes to kill. Jesus came so we might live. And so, you know, again, her exhortation was, what she wrote me, we cannot be afraid to ask, are you thinking about suicide? And if they are, not to be afraid to call for help. So this is a real issue. And for churches, and again, this is why I'm kind of excited the American Association of Christian Counselors partnered with Lifeway Research to do this, to kind of look at kind of where things are. Pastors want to help. Matter of fact, 80% say their church is equipped to assist someone who's threatening suicide, but only 30% strongly agree, meaning really that 2 in 3 pastors acknowledge they could be better equipped. And so I think there's a need for us to really find ways to help people to engage, even after. You know, one of the questions we asked was, how do you respond? And there's, you know, a good percent say they're involved after, but then not a long-term care after someone has taken, for the family after someone has taken his or her own life. So this is an area I think the church, and I don't know, I'm always hesitant to say there's an epidemic because we don't know what it was like in the Great Depression because we didn't have statistics then. We don't know what it was. But here's what we know. I don't know if it's an epidemic, but it's a crisis. And I mean, there's a high school not far from where I am right now where they have multiple suicides. And again, for all of us, this is an area, if there's anything that Jesus talked about, it's that he came to have to bring life. He is the life. He is the light of life. And people need that in their lives. And we have to engage. And sometimes people are really hurting and struggling. We have to engage with those hurting and struggling people.
Yeah, we wrote this week about suicide contagion, you know, which is basically that this becomes a contagious sort of thing. I mean, we don't know that that's the case with Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade. But what you're talking about in the school near you is what we saw here in Colorado Springs 2 years ago, where we had a string of suicides. And it very much was one after the other. And it wasn't in the schools that are in the poorer communities in Colorado Springs. These were the wealthy suburb schools, and we had a whole string of them. It was unbelievable. Colorado Springs was the number one in the state. I'm a little bit more comfortable calling this an epidemic. I'll call it a crisis, but we're talking about the second leading cause of death for people ages 15 to 34. And of course, I think you brought up something that I think is extremely important, which is churches aren't prepared to deal with the crisis when they face it. And I'm thankful, just recently on the Breakpoint podcast, I talked to Dr. Aaron Cariotti. He's the director of the bioethics program at UC Irvine. He's also written extensively on the church and its call to deal with depression, with personal darkness, and certainly what he called these deaths from despair, certainly suicide, but also opioid epidemic and other things like that. And he's been tapped on the shoulder by Rick Warren, and I'm thankful for Rick and Kay's leadership since the death of their son Matthew by suicide to bring this attention to the church. But I also want to kind of point out maybe another way that the church needs to run into this. You pointed out when you see someone struggling with mental illness, the church needs to have a plan. To not have a plan is not an option anymore. After a suicide or after an attempted suicide, where does that care come from? The church needs to be there. And if a pastor doesn't know how to address it, they need to learn how to address it. And please come to breakpoint.org and click on the link that says resources mentioned on the radio and podcast, and we'll point you to some places where you can start getting those answers. But I want to point to something else, and that is clearly in our society, as I said this week on Breakpoint, it's becoming increasingly difficult for people to be spiritually, mentally, and emotionally healthy. And so there's a cultural side of this. In a world where we have a whole lot of stuff, where's the hope? In a world where we have more options than we could possibly ever choose from, where is the choice for life and flourishing? And it's only the church that has that message. The government can't make a society of hope. And it also involves confronting really bad ideas. I mean, listen, we're mourning the death of Anthony Bourdain at the same time that arguments are being made for doctor-assisted suicide, that when people reach a point of physical or mental quote-unquote hopelessness, that they should have the right to take their own life. I mean, the inconsistency here is stunningly obvious, and it must be confronted. This is why we need churches to talk about these bills when they come up to vote. I've mentioned this before. When it happened in Colorado in 2016, I mean, I couldn't get the churches to talk about it. Now, I want to say all the churches. Some of my friends who are pastors were heroic. They got up in front of their congregation and said, you know, we are people of life. But churches that were, you know, quick to talk about things like the immigration issue or racism wouldn't touch this because it was, quote unquote, too political. And so doctor-assisted death passed in our state. And it passes, it not only passes a law, it passes a message that suicide is an option.
Agree.
And that's where we're actually becoming, that's where we're actually kind of shooting ourselves in the foot. We have a call to run into this darkness.
I agree. And I know that you have been, and we have been, but particularly in Colorado, on the front lines. I want to come back, though, to a second for the suicide, as we're talking about here. One of the things we know is that, even talking about epidemic or not epidemic, I think it's important, and here's my point, is that the suicide rate is at the highest it's been in about 30 years. But 30 years ago, it was declining then. But again, this goes up and down. And so my concern is, I don't want people to think that we can jump in. And when it goes up and down, it was, you know, it was about 10 suicides per 100,000 of the population. Now it's about 13 per 100,000 of the population with the most recent data we have. That's not that much of a difference. Here's what my concern is. When we see that it's an epidemic, we rush in to fix it like Ebola and get it to stop. And it doesn't work that way. This is a systemic issue. And I think I agree with you that it is in part a life issue and a devaluing of life issue too. But I also think, and I want to just be careful, I think it's a mental health issue. And I think that as a mental health issue, I don't want us to miss that this mental health issue doesn't go away. There are times when it's up. There are times when it's down. It's the time it's up right now. Epidemic, okay, I'm actually okay using that. I don't generally use that because I don't want people to miss that 10 years from now, if that number goes down from 13 to 10, that's still far too many. We live in a culture where there's so much mental health issues, struggles, more. And I think part of what has to change is the way we view mental illness, not all suicides are directly connected to that, but how we view mental illness has to be addressed as well. And I'm going to talk, you know, a lot more about that. I do so at Krishan Today and other places because it's deeply important to me.
No, it is. And I want to invite everyone to come to the Breakpoint website, breakpoint.org. Click on the resources tab there that says resources mentioned on the radio and podcast. I want you to read Ed's articles that he's written on this. And then I want you to listen to Aaron Cariotti's podcast interview with me. It was just really powerful. And one of the reasons that the church has failed to address this is because, in a sense, we're kind of Gnostic on this. We ignore the physical aspect of mental illness. And so we psychiatry has a bad name, and rightly so. There's really bad ideas in psychology and psychiatry, but we're hesitant to, you know, use medication, and the hesitation sometimes actually gets in the way of what is a physical illness. And that shouldn't be a problem for Christians who believe that the body is as fallen as the mind, and a lot of time this fallenness is connected. And I appreciated Dr. Cariotti's leadership and his clarity on that. Come to breakpoint.org and we'll link you to that. Ed, it's been great to talk to you. We're not quite finished yet. This week I had a visitor at the Colson Center office, and that was the Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback. When he was confirmed, we talked about that on the program here, and it was an honor this week for him to stop by the offices, and we had a terrific conversation on religious freedom. For the whole podcast, please go and subscribe to the Breakpoint podcast. But we wanted to play a segment of that interview where I'm talking to Sam Brownback, Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom for the United States, here on Breakpoint this week. Walk us through some of your priorities. Again, my guest here on the Breakpoint podcast is the Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, former governor of Kansas, representative, senator, grandpa. Yes. Don't want to forget that. He's done it all. Talk us through what you hope to accomplish in your tenure. What are the priorities that you have, and the things that you think to be a successful office? What are the priorities?
Well, my biggest one is for the gates of religious freedom to fly open around the world, so that we would see nations open up to religious freedom. We're working right now with Uzbekistan, and they're moving. They're right now a country of particular concern, one of the worst actors, but they're moving to open up the whole country to religious freedom. And it's because the philosophy is strong, but it's also because we're showing in the data that if you want your country to have less terrorism, one of the keys is to have more religious freedom. If you want your country to grow economically, one of the keys is religious freedom. It unleashes spiritual capital.
Well, that's a connection that I think a lot of people miss, and I was going to get to that. But since you brought it up, let's talk about that, because religious liberty in the United States has kind of long been part of our heritage. I mean, this is baseball, apple pie, religious freedom. It's just part of us. But right now, the branding's bad. Religious freedom for many people is code language for a license to discriminate. It's special interest. You know, the branding problem in other nations is probably, you know, different, and it's probably bad in other senses. But the connection to religious freedom with other freedoms, describe some of that. I'm not sure a lot of people understand how these freedoms are interrelated.
Yeah, and I don't know if they do either. But you're now starting to see it in the data. The world's concerned about terrorism. The United States is concerned about terrorism. A number of other countries around the world will say, okay, we're concerned about terrorism. Therefore, we're going to put down this particular faith community, and we're going to watch, and we're going to limit what they can do. When in the data, it's saying that's one of the worst things you can do, because as a government puts its heavy hand on a religious group, they tend to fight you a lot more, and you produce more terrorists. Whereas the data saying that countries that are more religiously free have less terrorism. The other thing, and this is one that really applies a lot in the United States, the first one does, but this one too, is the releasing of spiritual capital. So imagine America without religious freedom, and the hospitals and the schools and the welfare work that people do from the faith-based community, the help of people that get out of prison to get back on their feet that's done by the faith-based community, much of it very quietly,
right,
not known. But if you remove that from this nation, it is billions of dollars of activity and lots of it voluntary time. Just one little example of this. I started when I was governor of Kansas, I started a program of mentoring of people coming out of prison. I wanted to get a mentor for everybody that was released from prison to get them back on their feet. And we got it done for most people that wanted one. It reduced our recidivism rate in half. Wow. For those people just coming out. And most of the people that signed up were faith-oriented people. They were doing it because they felt a calling to do that. That's what I mean, where you're unleashing a spiritual capital that you want unleashed because of all the good that it does for people around the world.
That's just a portion of my conversation with Sam Brownback, the ambassador at large for international religious freedom for the United States of America, a post that we talked about, and we're thrilled that Sam Brownback took that position when he was confirmed. For the whole conversation, please check out the Breakpoint podcast. You can subscribe to it wherever you subscribe to your podcast or visit us at breakpoint.org. For Ed Stetzer, I'm John Stone Street. Thanks for joining us on Breakpoint this week.